Welcome to the In-Depth Digest for Monday, March 3rd, 2014. I'm Francis Rose, and this program gives you a weekly rundown of the important conversations you may have missed in the past week on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. You can find all the interviews at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. In this week's lineup, the Homeland Security Department spends fewer bucks and gets less bang. David Maurer from the Government Accountability Office has some insight.
DHS, like a number of other departments, is looking hard at what it spends its money on and trying to get the most out of its taxpayer dollars. And so you've seen a decline in the amount of ammunition that DHS has been purchasing every year since 2009.
Congress makes life worse for vets if the VA bill in the Senate becomes law. Senator Tom Coburn explains how.
The Senate isn't doing its job in terms of oversight to hold those people accountable within the VA to meet the needs of the veterans that we have promised.
First, though, the Homeland Security Department expects to buy about $23 million worth of ammunition for its employees this year. That's down about 33% since fiscal 2009. David Maurer is Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at the Government Accountability Office. He says Congress wants the GAO to explain how and why.
First, we wanted to find out how much ammunition is DHS buying. Secondly, we wanted to find out what it's being used for. And third, we wanted to get some information on the inventories that DHS is maintaining from year to year. And we also looked a little bit at their internal controls for tracking usage and inventories.
And those are all things that Congress has asked lots of questions about for a number of reasons over the past couple of years. So let's go through each of those. What's the significance, do you think, of that decline that I mentioned as I introduced you over the past several fiscal years, Dave?
Well, I think what it points to is the fact that DHS, like a number of other departments, is looking hard at what it spends its money on and trying to get the most out of its taxpayer dollars. And so you've seen a decline in the amount of ammunition that DHS has been purchasing every year since 2009.
You write that from fiscal years 08 through 13, DHS purchased an average of 109 millions of rounds of ammo for training, qualification, and operational needs, according to DHS data. What was your sense, because I know that you look from time to time at the quality of the data, what was your sense of the information that they gathered and the quality of it?
Well, the information, frankly, it was varied across the components, but we worked with them in a very detailed and painstaking way to get to the bottom line on the numbers that were reported in our final product. And we obviously stand behind those figures. DHS, as you can probably understand, cooperated with us fully on this review because they wanted to get the truth out there. There's been a lot of, you know, reporting out there in different media venues about how much ammunition DHS may or may not have purchased. And we thought it was important to respond to this congressional inquiry and get the facts out there.
You're right. DHS's ammunition purchases over the six-year period equate to an average of 1,200 rounds purchased per firearm-carrying agent or officer per year. If you figure there are about 240 work days or weekdays every year, that works out to, on a daily basis, expending very few rounds per day, it sounds like, Dave.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And of course, you know, our hope is that not, you know, someone isn't firing their weapon every single day. What's actually happening is most of these individuals are qualifying every quarter, so four times a year on their weapon. Many of them are qualifying on more than one weapon. You know, sometimes it'll be a sidearm and a long weapon. A small number of these folks are trained in very specialized weapons, so fully automatics or sniper rifles, those kinds of things. So when you look at the variety of missions that DHS performs, the number of individuals that are authorized to carry firearms, it's not surprising that they would be purchasing about 1,200 rounds per officer per year.
David Maurer is Director of Homeland Security and Justice Issues at the Government Accountability Office. You can read more about the government's ammo buying plans and hear my conversation with Dave at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up on the In-Depth Digest, Congress makes life worse for vets if the VA bill in the Senate becomes law. Senator Tom Coburn explains how. The budget pressure the Pentagon feels may get some relief from companies that do business with DOD or companies that want to do business with DOD. President Obama introduced a new kind of public-private partnership this week. Ilana Breutman is Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial-Based Policy. She explains DOD's role in these public-private partnerships. They're called Manufacturing Innovation Institutes.
The president has said that over the next decade, he'd like to roll out 45 of these manufacturing institutes. And DOD actually sponsored the pilot one about a year and a half ago. It's in Youngstown, Ohio, and it's an institute for 3D manufacturing. And we announced two new ones. One is with the digital thread, where you just have a better process for designing, modeling, manufacturing throughout the thread. And the other is lightweight metals. And what these institutes do is they bring together the government, academia, large and small companies, nonprofits, all to solve the valley of death, as they call it, in manufacturing between the scientific discovery and actually rolling out a good product at the end. We have a limited role, really. We sort of midwife this institute, and we provide funding, which is matched by private contributions for 5 years, and then it's got to be on its own, and it's got to be producing products and producing jobs. And the whole idea is DOD will sponsor institutes that are of interest to DOD for obvious reasons. Obviously, lightweight metals make our systems more efficient and more effective. But they're also the benefit is also to the U.S. economy at large.
The benefit to the companies that are involved with this, the private part of the public-private mm-hmm. partnership, is what?
So they get to partner with the really cutting-edge technology and research that's going on in academia. But often, academia and companies just don't work together as naturally. They have different kinds of parameters and intellectual property rights and just different market spaces. So the benefit is that they can take this cutting-edge research and really use it to create a market solution for themselves.
So they're essentially in on the ground floor of this and yes. able to then leverage that to their advantage as they go out and create products with what
exactly.
comes out
exactly.
of these incubators.
Yeah.
You said that the goal is eventually to get 45 of these. Do you have a sense of how many of them might involve things that DOD is interested in, or is that too? Are we still too early in the process?
I think it's still too early. For one thing, to really get 45 in, the president has asked Congress to pass legislation that will authorize and fund these, and there is a bipartisan piece of legislation in both the House and the Senate. But right now we're doing our part, and I'm sure we'll do another couple after these, but we want to make sure that we're being really thorough in our research behind each of the topics we might wish to sponsor.
Ilana Breutman is Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Manufacturing and Industrial Base Policy. You can hear my entire conversation with her at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You're listening to the In-Depth Digest from Federal News Radio, the most important conversations you may have missed this week on In-Depth with Francis Rose. Details of DOD's fiscal 2015 budget request are out now from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. The full plan out on Tuesday. Most of what Secretary Hagel talked about last week involves cutting, especially around force structure and some weapons systems. Gordon Adams is professor of international relations at American University, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, a contributor to Foreign Policy magazine, and former associate director for national security and international affairs at the Office of Management and Budget. I asked him what he sees between the lines in the budget details he's hearing about.
The top takeaway is we're about 75% towards realism. He has acknowledged that the budget they sent up last year, February of 13 for this fiscal year, the levels that they put in there for the future are not going to be achieved. That's realistic. They are not going to be achieved. The less realistic part of what he had to say is that he assumed that they could send up a budget that was above the levels in the Budget Control Act of 2011, which is what they're doing, about $115 billion over 5 years higher than what is in the Budget Control Act. So there's a piece here that is not very realistic that says you're going to have more money than than is realistic, and you're going to put program in this budget that is then not going to be achievable, in my judgment, because they're more likely to get funding at the Budget Control Act level. So good dose of realism, a small dose of wishful thinking, sort of in a package.
The question nobody really seems to be asking today as we cover this, and I'm in the same boat, I suppose, is does any of this even matter? Because the appropriations negotiators in the House and Senate have already started. They had a top-line budget number for the overall budget after the Murray-Ryan budget deal was signed by the president. And so I guess part of me wonders if any of this really matters or if it's all kind of kabuki at this point.
There's a dollop of kabuki in this. By having a plan put forward, the appropriators have some, you know, options that they can choose from and some sense of the building's preference, and I'm sure they're going to respect that and they're going to pay some attention to it. But you're right, the appropriators have been marching out pretty smartly and beginning to work what they think they're going to look like. What that tells me is both the Pentagon and the appropriators knew what the number was for 2015, because that was in Ryan Murray. That number is known. We know it's 496. We're done with that. What we don't know is what the details are on that, and that's where the submission is likely to have some kind of an impact on what the Congress does. But we know two other things as well, or one we know and one we don't. One of them is the president's going to put up this investment package thing that has $26 billion in it for defense. I don't think the appropriators, I don't think the budget committee are going to touch that with a 10-foot barge pole, which means it's all wish list and a prayer. I don't know why they bothered to do it. The other thing that we don't know is they haven't come forward with an OCO request.
Gordon Adams is professor of international relations at American University, distinguished fellow at the Stimson Center, a contributor to Foreign Policy magazine, and former associate director for national security and international affairs at the Office of Management and Budget. You can read more about the DOD budget plans that are out so far, and you can hear my conversation with Gordon Adams at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. This is the In-Depth Digest from Federal News Radio. Every week you hear the most important conversations you may have missed throughout the week on In Depth with Francis Rose. Allegations of purging veteran case files at Los Angeles and Dallas offices of the Department of Veterans Affairs are spotlighting accountability issues at VA. The Senate has rejected legislation that would increase the number of vets eligible for benefits and the number of benefits they can get. Senator Tom Coburn is ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. He helped stop that bill, and I asked him how to get around the idea that if you vote against veterans legislation, you're voting against vets.
Well, this is a veterans bill that's actually going to hurt the veterans that are in the VA system right now. Because of the expansion in this bill to under Section 308 of the bill, if you don't have health insurance other than through an Obamacare exchange, you now have access to the VA system. The VA system is not handling the veterans that are enrolled in it now through service-connected disabilities. So this massive expansion, potentially from 6 million veterans to 22 million veterans, and we're at least 35 to 40% of the time not meeting service standards, not caring for patients in the way they need to be cared on a timely basis. I've got a list of all the failures of all these VA hospitals where diagnostic tests that could have saved the veteran's life wasn't performed because they're backed up. So the question ought to be, shouldn't we take care to keep the promises that we've made now before we add 18 new programs to the VA? And by the way, none of the bill is paid for. None of the bill is paid for. And you're talking a $60 billion increase on top of a VA program that has had a 59% increase since 2009. So we're spending $124 billion a year on veterans programs. You're going to be spending $200 billion. And you're still not going to be taking care of the veterans that are service-connected right now. The House Veterans Committee held 60 hearings last year. 34 of those were vigorous oversight hearings on the failures of the VA. The Senate had 16 hearings. Four of them were oversight hearings, and they were hardly vigorous. So the Senate isn't doing its job in terms of oversight to hold those people accountable within the VA to meet the needs of the veterans that we have promised.
Another bill that's may not make it to the floor is introduced by Senator Rubio, and there's a companion bill on the House side. Senator Congressman Miller, the chairman of the House Veterans Affairs Committee, has introduced a bill that would, he believes, make the SESers at the Veterans Affairs Administration more accountable to leadership there. Where are you on that bill? Or have you had a chance to study
it? I haven't looked at it. But the best way to get accountability is to shine some sunlight on what's not happening at the VA today. I mean, when it takes a year and a half for a veteran who came out of Afghanistan, who has significant disabilities, takes a year and a half to get them processed before they can actually get their treatment, I mean, that's called government failure. That's a failure of meeting our commitment. And what we ought to have is a bill on the floor that changes the accountability so that the Veterans Administration is held accountable for its failure to carry out the charges and spend wisely the money that Congress has given them.
Senator Tom Coburn is ranking member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. You can hear my entire conversation with him and read more about the vets bill at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Thanks very much for listening to this week's In-Depth Digest, a weekly collection of the most important conversations you may have missed from In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. You can find these conversations and all the resources from the program at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we'll be back next week with another edition of the In-Depth Digest.